Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Libby, thank you for being here. Your content is great. The idea of a superpower being client service and process in a business is not the most sexy topic to talk about. Probably the most overlooked topic by most of us as business owners or advisors. So walk us through like when that fire got lit. And then we're going to dive deep into why it's important. Every advisor listening needs to take it seriously, even though it's overlooked all the time.
Yeah, and don't worry, we'll make systems and processes actually fun. I've figured out the formula for that, but it wasn't really important to me when I started my business. So I'll take you back to 2008. So 2008 for me as an advisor was a very scary year, but not because of the market. It was because I found out I was pregnant. So it was great news because my husband and I wanted a baby, but it was super scary news because for the previous 4 years, when I started my business from scratch, I had been working around the clock like a crazy person, right? Nights, weekends, a client wants to meet on a Saturday at 10 a.m. I was there. And I knew that there was no way that I could work like that and show up as the mom that I wanted to be, right? I was committed to not being that mom that was tethered to her cell phone at soccer games and working nights and weekends and missing all of those integral moments with my kiddos. So I remember that kind of being that inflection moment for me where I realized that while I had grown something really successful and I was making a lot of money, I didn't really have a real business, like the kind with a vision and systems and processes. I just had a very, very busy Libby. And I knew that I wanted to go from working like 80 hours a week down to 24. I wanted to figure out how to run a business on 3 days a week without sacrificing that vision of success and that growth that I still wanted to experience in my business.
Do you, diving a little deeper into that, was there like a moment, like something happened in your life that forced this? Because I feel like there's a lot of advisors that know they need to be doing something, but maybe it's nature that we all kind of wait as long as possible. Or were you able to kind of see the writing on the wall and say, like, I need to get ahead of this?
Yeah, well, I remember, you know, so I remember looking at my husband at the time and realizing like, okay, I'm pregnant. Like this, like we have a deadline. There is no pushing this back. This can't just stay on the, you know, to-do list again for the next 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I just had that. That was really it, right? The baby was the precipice for the change. And I'm so glad it happened because it ultimately changed the trajectory of the business forever.
Wow. And so where'd you start? What was the first thing? Because I mean, for all of us, we look at our practice and we're like, let's just get more business, like winning business, solve it. Then we'll put fires out as they come up.
Yeah, right. And that's essentially what I had done, right? Like I'd grown a very successful practice. I was making a ton of money. And I realized like, wow, I can't step away from this for more than a week without everything catching on fire and being an absolute nightmare. So it started with really kind of identifying what are the core processes that every financial advisory practice has, and really starting to map those out. And so what I've identified over the last, you know, 2 decades in this industry, that there's really 7 or 8 core processes that every advisory practice has. And then I picked the ones that I could just immediately start capturing, creating standard operating. Like, what was the stuff that I was doing over and over and recreating the wheel every time? Like, so like every advisor, I'd sit there and go, okay, I need to write an email about to this new prospect. And I'd start it from scratch, even though I knew I had one. Or I'd go back into like my sent box and try to find one from like 3 or 4 weeks ago and then copy and paste it. And so it was like, okay, you have got to get organized. Like your business is big enough that you actually need to identify the processes, create a place to save them, and start actually building something that's scalable and not so dependent on you.
What is the Because when you talk about that, I guess my mind in the past, like, I just need to hire somebody.
Yes.
But
yes.
I'm assuming there's things that every advisor listening could do today on their own, which eventually maybe moves into a hire. But where I've messed up is if I hire somebody and say, hey, fix this problem, and I have not
laid the vision for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, or the
yeah.
why.
Well, that's our first tendency, right? Is to either like throw money or throw staff at a problem, right? And for me, I personally am a big believer that you have to, but in order to scale your business, before you can scale a staff person and expect them to take a whole bunch of really meaningful stuff off of your plate, you have to be able to scale yourself first. So for me, kind of where I started was a model week or an ideal week, and really how am I actually spending my time? And then looking at kind of that Pareto principle, right? That 20% of my actions are driving the vast majority of my results. So how do I free up more time? So if I want to go from working 80 hours a week down to just 24, I need to be spending those 24 hours in the zone on that 20%, doing things that actually impact the practice. And then everything else I need to start documenting and creating standard operating procedures for. And then really, then how do I, and it's so much more. So like when I talk about systems and processes, right? And like, how do I make it fun? So it started with, okay, what do I actually need to do so that I can breathe a little bit easier? And then it became, well, how do we actually use systems and processes to create this remarkable client experience? Because I knew at the same time as all of this was happening that if I could not spend time, energy, effort, or money on marketing, if I could get more referrals and more high quality referrals, that alone would take so much time and energy and effort off of my plate. And so when we started building out systems and processes, we started looking at them through the lens of the client experience, right? And what is actually psychologically happening to our clients as they're working with us. So we had to look at all of these processes through basically two lenses. So the first round, as I kind of stepped out of that advisor role and more into like the CEO headspace, was just getting like the how do we remove friction for our side of the business in these processes, right? How do we get less NIGOs? How do we move the funds from Fidelity to Schwab? How do we actually transfer things, take applications? How do we do all of the business side of it? And then it was kind of coming back around and looking at everything through the lens of the client and making sure that our processes were addressing the journey that they're on and making sure it was a frictionless process for the clients as well as for our business.
Did you find yourself having to kind of reinvent it when you looked at it from the client perspective? Like, are those opposing or can they?
Oh, absolutely. No, completely different, like completely different experiences. So I'll give you kind of onboarding as an example, since that's what my headspace is in and that's what the book is about. So if we think about it from the advisor side, right, we get a $2 million client and we're like, yes, this has been a great day. They're going to move all over their money. They seem so excited to work with us. We're excited to work with them. In fact, I think I'm going to take the rest of the day off, take the team out to lunch and go home and do some, you know, self-care. So maybe you're going golfing or maybe I'm taking a bubble bath and reading and we're so excited, right? And we've got our processes. We're going to be able to transfer their funds and we've got a whole concierge level thing happening on our end, but we neglect what our clients are going through. And while our clients might be excited to work with us, they're also thinking, oh my gosh, I hope I made the right decision, right? They have that immediate chemical response of buyer's remorse. Like, I hope they made the right decision. How much work is this really going to be at tax time? Is this really going to, you know, trigger taxes like they said they would? Or is it going to be so much more? How much paperwork is it? Oh my God, I have to set up a new portal. Oh, that means another login. I wonder if it requires two characters or four characters or three underscores and a capital. You know, I have to break up with Dave. Dave's been a fine advisor. He didn't really do anything wrong, but man, it's going to be hard to tell him that we're leaving and I don't really know what to say. Like, so we're in the bubble bath, just living our best life, depending on our processes from our business side. And if our process isn't designed to look at it through the lens of the client and make sure we're helping them move through this journey. So that could look like simple stuff of, hey, here's a script or an email that you can send your previous advisor that we found works really well, thanking them for all the years of service and being really clear about why it is that you're moving, right? So that's friction really from both sides. So if we look at it from the business side, we know as soon as old advisor gets that transfer paperwork, they're on the phone with our clients and trying to conserve the business. And it's causing question or pause in our client's mind. And maybe, you know, Dave wants to meet with them and they're going to go in because they feel obligated and Dave's going to try to undercut the work that we're, it can just slow down. It puts friction and drag on the process, right? So if we can give the client this script, and they can email it off to the, and then a follow-up skip. And if Dave emails back and says he'd like to meet with you, here's a follow-up that you can send, right? Like, how do we make this as easy as possible for our clients? How do we show up looking like the professional that we are and like we've done this 10,000 times, right? And so I love onboarding as a process in general to talk about, because when done well and when done through that lens of the client journey, there's so many opportunities for you to just look and feel light years different than any experience they've had with a previous advisor beforehand, which immediately starts the relationship off with referrals and this like deep gratitude and loyalty, because they have this recency bias of what they've just experienced previously with a previous advisor.
Yeah, I've found that the bar is always lower than I would maybe think it is in our business.
Oh, for sure.
Type of financial plan a client has received in the past, or I mean, when I'm in a meeting and I tell a client, most financial plans I see are a collection of products bought over time.
Right.
Unanimously, they're like, yeah, you pretty much described my financial plan. And so that's not a knock on the business. I think maybe just more like, we're all so busy. There's so much opportunity. We're all making enough money that maybe there's not the urgency to take it as seriously as you're talking about. Like, why would you say most advisors are not doing it this way?
I would say it's a couple of things. One, it's we tend to operate off of minimum viable product, right? Like, what is the least amount of work, right? And it's from someone who is obsessed with efficiency, right? What is the least amount of work that we need to do to get the best possible results? And if we're moving money from Fidelity to Schwab and there's no issues, right? It's happening quickly. We look at that as that's good. And what most advisors struggle with is we're so busy being in the tornado that is our business and dealing with all of the stuff that's right in front of our face. And we don't necessarily have clients complaining, right? Like, so the advisors that I work with tend to say like things like, nobody's leaving because I'm not delivering this exceptional service, but I know that I could do better. It's not what I pictured or what I want, or I would love to carve out some time to work on this. And we've all done that, right? We've all been like, okay, I have this day on the calendar where I have 8 hours with nothing scheduled, and I'm going to spend the whole day working on this process. Then the day comes and you're like, okay, I got to get the plan done for the Joneses, and I have to deal with this HR thing. And then there's a compliance thing that I have to get done by this date. And then, oh crap, I only have an hour to work on my processes. So I guess I'll do that some other time, right? So it's not that advisors don't want to do it or they don't see the need to do it. Sometimes it can also, it's just a matter of finding the time, or make, I should say, not finding the time, but prioritizing it and making the time, because we know that every investment we make in a process, A, makes it more scalable, but B, the dividends that are paid back on that are huge, right? We're just our own worst enemies because this business is so crazy.
Do you think there's like a Gitmo good enough to move on level? Because I've had times where my team got obsessed with process and service that mm-hmm. it took us away from helping more people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like in seasons, like you do a season where you tighten your process and then get back to work and then you address it again later.
Yes. So one of the things that I see a lot is advisors who are perpetually waiting for their process to be perfect or working to make it perfect, as opposed to memorializing it and moving on for a couple of years. So I have kind of a process in my world where we build a process. So let's say if you look at a process on a scale of like 1 to 4, 1 being like, you have something that sort of lives in your head, but it's not on paper. If you can move that to a 2, just by just getting down the things that you already basically do, that alone is a huge step, right? And so you don't have to go from a 1 to a 5 and look at all the stuff that all of our, you know, favorite LinkedIn advisors are doing and have this big, over-the-top, very experiential process right away. It's something that can be developed over time. So I think a lot of advisors get super stuck in this idea that it has to be the way that Sten's doing it, or I heard Libby talking about, or Andy says he does this thing, and our process isn't good enough until it's there, right? And then we get stuck in this forever wanting the process to be perfect and not actually implementing a darn thing. So for me, I'd love you to move it from like a 1 to a 3 and then memorialize it and not touch it again for a year or 2. and then come back and say, okay, how do we make this incrementally better? How do we move it from a 3 to a 5? Or maybe it's a process of like, hey, once a quarter, I'm going to add something extra to one of my processes, one of those 8 processes that I talked about. Or it is like, it doesn't have to be an overnight sensation. It can be just good enough to move on. And then as you make more time to actually step into that CEO role, really fine-tuning those and polishing those, or hiring people on your team that can do it.
Yeah, I think the sense of awareness. So for everybody listening right now, try to put yourself in a camp. I think on one side of the spectrum, it's, I don't think about process at all. I just try to get people to say yes and hope they don't leave.
Right.
You know that most advisors' retention is pretty high, which I'm shocked by. If you're not doing great service, not following up well, like those advisors still keep clients, but I don't know if that's the best benchmark of a health business. Or you're over here and you're trapped in process world. Like you are the advisor that's so process detail oriented that you're like, it has to be perfect, and you're not helping enough people.
Well, I have advisors that come to me all the time, like right when they're starting their business, and like, hey, can you help me build processes? And I'm like, no, it doesn't do you a thing to have a bunch of amazing processes if you have nobody to put them through, and then you go out of business anyway. So you need to kind of, in my opinion, you need to kind of build it messy and put those first couple of years and really figure out who you even are as a planner and what do you want your deliverables to be. And yeah, like there's obviously like low hanging fruit of things that you continuously repeat that you should probably template, but you don't need to have a full blown level 5 process on all of your processes until you actually have a really good book of business.
Yeah. I met an advisor once. He brought a binder to a meeting and it must have been 100 pages. And it was a SOP for every single possible thing that could happen in his practice. I was like, that helps probably with enterprise value. And like someday we all may want that. And he was in business for like 40 years, but I was 25 at the time. And I had to fight the temptation of like, well, maybe that's something I need to build.
Right.
But then again, a super efficient practice with no income. Where do you find yourself now? Like if you are the process client experience, like you love it through and through. Are you in a season right now where you're like, I've done it? And obviously you're writing a book, you're creating content, but in your practice, are you in like kind of a flow state where you're like, I get to enjoy what I've built, or are you reinventing it now?
Yeah. Well, in all fairness, I sold my business in 2019. So I sold the practice. So I'm no longer actively practicing. Yeah. But I will say for the last couple of years, we were in that flow state, or maybe even longer than a couple of years. Now, I was always reiterating. I was always tinkering because I'd kind of hit that point. I don't know. I kind of feel like every advisor, once you hit 10 years in, about every 5 years, you sort of get the itch to do something that to reinvigorate yourself. And so mine was always kind of like, well, how do I make this process even more scalable? Or how do we automate it? Or, you know, especially this was in 2019 when I sold my practice at the end of 2019, right before the pandemic, right? So we were getting into workflows were just becoming a thing. So there was always a leveling up that was occurring. But for the most part, I was working less than I had ever worked in the previous 16 years. I was making more than I'd ever made. And it was probably the first year or two there towards the end that I didn't try to quit.
Nice. This actually is enjoyable.
That's right.
So if you can tell us about the book. I know there's so much stuff, and you were able to find a very specific part of process to kind of go layers deep. So really, I think the way you described it to me is like, I could take that even with my team and we could implement it pretty quick.
Yeah. So kind of the concept was I love reading and I love super short, highly actionable books. So I didn't want 300 pages or more of a bunch of fluff. Like I really wanted to start just picking off processes. So I mentioned that I kind of think there's 7 or 8 core processes, and I really want to just go through those and say, here is a blueprint of all of the potential things. So let me gather all the possible ideas for you and then walk you through some of the psychology. So researching a lot of the psychology of what clients are experiencing during that process, and then helping you build and have a strategy to build up to that level 5 process, and really kind of picking through. So the book is all about the very first 90 days after a client says yes to you to become a long-term client. So that's kind of what we consider at the Efficient Advisor onboarding. So starting at the day you've done all of your planning, the client says yes, you're going to start actually managing assets or taking applications. So it's the first 90 days and how to really create a remarkable onboarding experience that drives tons of referrals and builds longevity in our client relationship. There's a lot of research and data that shows for service industries, product industries, this is why everybody has a 90-day return policy as sort of a standard. There's a lot of data surrounding this first 90 days and the longevity of the client relationship. It's improportional. So the more remarkable you are in the first 90 days, the longer the client relationships and the more referrals they tend to generate.
Which I think what I've heard advisors talk about is like the lifetime value of a client.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're talking to advisors, like what is the best use of your time? Would you argue that a stellar 90-day onboarding as far as return on investment is maybe one of the best things they can spend their time on in the next 3 months?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Like I was speaking at a conference in Arizona this past year, and I had an old coaching client come to me and say, he stopped me in the lobby and he was like, Libby, I have got to tell you, the last 2 years have been like absolutely insane. We had revamped their onboarding process. And I remember at the time, Craig saying to me like, well, this is kind of like extra, right? So like as a systems person, I usually am trying to get people to do less. And this is one of those times that I intentionally want you to maybe do more. And he was like, at first, I kind of thought you were full of crap, but holy smokes, we've received more referrals in that first 90 days than we had received in the previous like years and years of our business. He's like, so believe it or not, this stuff actually works. I'm like, I did believe it, Craig. I knew that it worked.
So what is the 90 day experience?
Mm-hmm.
I know as we coach advisors, there's so many service models. And so I'll tell advisors, I'm not going to tell you there's one way to do it.
Right.
But I do believe there's some truths we can all hold on to.
Yes.
That we all shouldn't be doing it differently. What would you say to somebody that's listening? They're like, I have a great 90-day process and I feel somewhat defensive of it. What are some core truths that you're like, audit your 90-day process with these few things. And as long as it checks these boxes, Libby's happy.
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of take the first 90 days and I break it down into really kind of every process, in my opinion, has three layers. There is the actual like nuts and bolts layer, right? Which is the filling out the paperwork, getting the client set up on the portal, like the actual like to-do items. Okay. Then there's this layer and a good advisor has this layer down pat, right? They're not making silly mistakes. They're not dropping the ball. They're keeping the clients informed as to what's happening with their rollovers, et cetera. Then the next layer up is the expectations layer. And great advisors are intentional about setting expectations with their clients. Here's what's in scope. Here's what's out of scope. Here's what you can expect from us. Here's the best way to communicate with our team. Here's how we handle referrals. Here's how we handle privacy with people you refer, like really setting all of these expectations with clients. Here's what you can expect as far as turnaround, stuff like that. Then the remarkable advisor has this third layer, and this is the human to human experience. So, you know, our clients don't want to engage with an entity or engage with a brand. They want to engage with individuals and they want to be known, heard, and seen, right? And they want to feel valued. And so how can an advisor deliver this remarkable experience? And we do that through adding these three layers. So the first 90 days, the way that we've broken it down to make it kind of easy is days 1 through 30 are all focused on being professional, that nuts and bolts. Mm-hmm. The second 30-day chunk is dedicated to surprising and delighting our clients. And then that third 30-day chunk is dedicated to shocking and awing. And so I think of it like dating, right? So in the beginning, when we meet a prospect, we're taking them through our planning process, and whether we charge them a fee or not, I look at it like dating, right? You're putting on your best front. You're seeing them all the time. We're on the phone. We're gathering data. We're talking. We're analyzing stuff. We're coming up with recommendations. There's a lot of touch.
Oh, yeah.
And then the point where they say, yes, we want to work with you forever, I kind of view that as marriage. And what happens with most advisors, right, we have this really high touch process, and all of a sudden we drop our clients into our ongoing service model, or maybe we only see them once a year or every 6 months, which is appropriate in a lot of cases, right? But our clients kind of have that feeling of they just fell off a cliff, right? Like, wow, when we were dating, they were all over it. They were taking me out and showing me a good time. And now that we're married, we go out on our anniversary. Is that it? Right? And we don't want it to feel that way. So, and that's kind of that idea too. You know, we've all heard it like, oh, Well, when Bill and I started working together, he called me all the time. But once he had my money, then he kind of ignored us. So even though that's the service model they might be in and it might be super appropriate for them, we need to slowly ease them into it over this first 90 days so it doesn't feel like they just fell off of a cliff and that once we got their money, quote unquote, that all of a sudden we started to ignore them and it was only we're going to take them out on their anniversary to do their annual review or whatever. So those are kind of the three segments, if you will, and each one sort of has, in my opinion, some stakeholder pieces.
Yeah. Nice. That's really helpful to view it that way because it can feel a little daunting. I know like when I meet advisors that have never charged a financial planning fee before, they're just like, that's just all new. Like, I don't even know where to start. It's like, I'm at the base of Everest looking up versus, hey, first you need to learn how to believe that you're worth it. And then you need to learn how to communicate your value so they know you're worth it. And then you're eventually working to the point where you actually ask for the fee. And so it's not like a do it all overnight.
Right.
For me, the way my mind works is like, okay, I can do the nuts and bolts part first. Like, how are we doing there? And I think probably, hopefully pretty good. The 30, second 30 and third 30, to me, that brings up to me that book, Unreasonable Hospitality.
Yes.
That was so cool. I never worked in the industry for restaurants, but like a peek behind the curtain of like what the best, how they do it and how they think about their customers was really fun. This does feel like, as I try to think about some of the advisors I've coached, somewhat of a luxury if you don't have the capacity. It feels, is it fully necessary? When you coach advisors, like where do you hit a snag? Is everybody on board with the first 30, like nuts and bolts it, but they kind of fall off in 60 and 90 days?
Well, it's interesting. So like in our like group coaching program, right? Like people, when we do the onboarding section, people are like, oh my gosh, I want all of the fun surprise and delight, shock and awe stuff. But oh crap, I actually need to go back and develop some of the boring SOP stuff. So we tend to want to do the stuff that feels exciting and fun and over the top and extra special for our clients, when in fact, we probably need to establish some of that nuts and bolts stuff. So I would argue it depends on what you're trying to build. If you are trying to build a highly referable practice that gets lots and lots of ideal client referrals, then yes, this is a necessary component. It's not a, oh, that would be nice to have someday. And again, right, the goal for me of creating the book was to create this huge buffet that you can choose from. There's going to be a couple of main entrees and I'm like, don't sleep on this one, right? Like this is the thing that will make your life so much easier. But by putting in this effort into onboarding, so I can give you kind of an example of one of the pieces for us that was in that middle chunk is we did a formal onboarding meeting. And it was originally designed to be part of this letdown process that we were talking about. But what we found as we kind of tested it and tweaked it and experimented with it is that actually by doing this, it saved us an insane amount of time and set our clients off on that right trajectory with us. So instead of us sending them an email saying, hey, all of your money's arrived, we're going to go ahead and get it invested. Here's your link to fidelity.com. Go ahead and get signed up for that. And don't forget to download this app. And you know, instead of doing all of that, we would do a formal onboarding meeting where, and the beautiful part of onboarding is I wasn't even part of it as the advisor. I had a full-time director of operations who literally handled all of these things. So for me, this was a really scalable process. So she would meet with the client and we had a formal agenda and she would go through like, here's everything that we completed. Okay, let's go ahead and get your fidelity.com account set up right now. Let's get you logged in. Once we're logged in, I'm going to show you, this could be virtual or in person, I'm going to show you how to navigate it. Here's how you find stuff. Here's where you find your tax returns. Go ahead and pull out your smartphone. Let's go ahead and get the app downloaded right now. Because there's nothing more frustrating. So going back to our earlier conversation about friction, right? So you have a client who finally has time. They sit down on Saturday morning. They go to create the member portal. And they're like, oh gosh, I need this special member number. Like, so I was with Thrivent as a broker dealer. We had this Thrivent member number that nobody could find unless you were online. Well, to get online, you had to have your member number. So they would inevitably, even though we'd email it to them, they'd call us over the weekend and they couldn't get it set up. By the time we called them back Monday, they're back into the throes of their work week, right? And this becomes another to-do. And imagine like sitting at your computer on a Saturday trying to get into your portal when you have the time and not being able to do it. It's just one of those things that it's like, I knew it. This process is really annoying, right? I knew this was going to be a huge pain in the butt. So instead, by having this set time on the calendar where we're helping literally walk them through it and all of the stuff that we want them to do, here's our Facebook page, like our Facebook, follow us on Twitter, here's our Instagram, like all of these things. And then preemptively addressing any potential like oopsies that could happen. So over the course of my career, we collected all of the mistakes or things that we had to say no to or like things that prevented us, like caused friction that prevented us from saying yes to clients. So we would make sure in that appointment that we had their beneficiaries correct, that they had their third-party authorizations on file, that we had the authorization to talk to their CPAs and their attorneys. Because there's nothing worse than like Jan calling in to see if she paid Jim's life insurance premium and we can't disclose it because we don't have the right form on file. And now we have to send this form for you to sign. And then we'll call you back after we get the form and we confirm with our corporate office that it's been received. And now we can release this information to you just to tell you whether you paid the friggin' premium or not.
That's so by how did you talk about it? Yeah.
Yeah, right. So like all of these little things that could potentially having the wrong banking on file. There's nothing worse than a client needing a wire transfer and you're like, well, it's going to take 10 days for us to get the right bank on file or it's going to be this whole process. So by buttoning up all of those little things and then setting expectations. So we had, this would be kind of another stakeholder for me, is we had this formal document called the expectations of our engagement. And I have a whole episode on it. I have examples and examples, but it's really laying out like, here's how we're going to work together. Here's how you communicate with us. Here's what you can expect in working with us. What's in scope and what's not in scope. Here's how our office was closed on Fridays. If something happens on Friday, here's what you can do. Here's how you get a hold of our corporate office. Here's what is a really an emergency and here's what can wait till Monday. Yeah. Just laying all those expectations out with our clients so that everybody understands. Like it's like simple stuff. You know, if a client called in on a Monday and needed a beneficiary change, like if it's not an emergency, hey, all of our forms, we do all of our form processing on Thursday. So you can expect to get that on Thursday by end of day. Does that sound great? And then your team doesn't feel like everything is on fire and they have to drop what they're doing in order to get that beneficiary form done for the Smiths. And then if we waited till Thursday, but we didn't communicate that to the Smiths, right? Like then they would be expecting it by the end of the day, Monday. So just by laying these expectations out of what they can expect from working with you alleviates so much problem. And I'll tell you what, our clients, when we started doing this process, they were so grateful. Like, we've never experienced anything like this before. Thank you for helping us troubleshoot this. Yeah, you're right. That would have been really frustrating on a Saturday to try to set this up. And we didn't have people calling or emailing to figure out, where do I go to find my 1099s? Because we had literally just shown them, recorded the thing, sent it to them. You know, there's so many easy ways for advisors to just grease the wheels to alleviate future hiccups.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that, you know, Ritz-Carlton concierge thing. We want to anticipate our clients' needs before they even know that they have them.
Yeah. I think as you talk about that, I'm like, yeah, a recording of a video that can be repurposed, even an onboard and welcome video from the advisor, mm-hmm. if they're not going to be in the onboarding meeting, that they're, mm-hmm. this stuff feels like a little bit of work, but is evergreen to some degree, mm-hmm. That your team will thank you, clients will thank you. So you have me thinking about a lot of stuff. I'm going to have to think through like what's the first few things that we want to address, because I'm sure there's a lot. But for everybody listening right now that's in somewhat of a Libby's right, my practice is not efficient, my clients are not giving what they need, your book's coming out soon, so mm-hmm. cliffhanger on that, but we don't know when yet, but everybody watch out for it. What's like the immediate takeaway as we wrap up? Like what would you encouragement and say do this thing tomorrow?
Yeah, if you could do anything tomorrow, it would be making sure that in this first 90 days that there are intentional communication points along the way and that we do it in a variety of communication styles. So just like love languages, all of our clients have different communication styles and we can't one-off it, right? We can't have, well, this is the way Sten likes to receive his information and this is the way that April likes to receive her information and this is the way, right? We have to have one standardized way of doing things. But really thinking of it through that lens of dating, like, okay, once we marry, how can I keep dating my spouse? How can I slowly drop them down? So whether or not you have a formal onboarding experience, okay, great. That would be an awesome to have and would probably save you a lot of time and energy in the future. But if that's not realistic right now, how can we at least engage in that middle 30 to 60 days and say, hey, have you set up the portal? Did you have any problems with it? Is there anything that we can help you do? Kind of following up on those to-do items in a way that feels very concierge-like. The other thing would be to have some sort of almost like a Domino's pizza tracker, right? Like everybody loves to know, like my kids, ever since they were little, when we order pizza, they love the Domino's pizza tracker, right? Everybody loves to know what to expect next. Our human brain is wired to want to know what's coming up. So being very intentional with our clients from the moment they say yes to us is, here's what you can expect next. And then what? And then what? And even for things that take a long time, like underwriting long-term care. I mean, goodness gracious, that can take 6 months. So how do we keep the client apprised consistently of what's going on, even if nothing's going on, just so they know if the pizza's in the oven, quote unquote, and when it's out for delivery, and here's what we're doing, and here's what we need you to do. So it's really just this add one thing that makes the experience a little bit better. How can we surprise and delight? And then eventually, like, okay, how can we shock and awe? But when you read the book, the thing I always get, so I went to school for engineering physics, right? So I went to school to be a rocket scientist, literally. And when I was writing the book and when I was looking at the first few drafts, it was like, wow, nothing in here is like rocket science. And I remember the publisher going, that's great, because that means literally anybody can do any of these things. None of it is hard. It's just a matter of being intentional.
Love that. And where can everybody go? I'm thinking in my mind, there's people on my team I want to get engaged with your stuff. Like where can people go to see more content outside of the book, which is coming? What's a next step on that front?
Yeah. So we do a lot of content on LinkedIn. We also have a Facebook community that has about 3,000 advisors in it. That's totally free. The Efficient Advisor Community. We drop a lot of content in there. And as the book gets closer to coming out, we'll be doing all kinds of stuff, giving away free chapters. And the book is going to be, for me, I think it's such an important piece for advisors and such a quick win that we're going to make it super duper reasonably priced, like cheaper free for the first however long. So advisors will do it because it's so easy and it's so actionable. Every time I'm doing it as a keynote, people are like, oh, I have one or two things I could literally do tomorrow, and it takes practically no effort. The other place is theefficientadvisor.com. So that's where the book will be available for pre-sale and all kinds of fun content, samples, examples, templates, things to come along with it.
Love it. Libby, thank you so much. This was great.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Sten here. Hope you're doing well. I want to ask you for a favor. My legacy team is growing, and I'm looking to fill a couple positions. I'm looking for an experienced advisor, somebody that can come in right away and start serving clients to help us handle the overflow of opportunities we have. But I'm also looking for up-and-coming advisors, a pair planner, junior advisor that wants to learn with me to come help level up our team, but also allow me to help them level up and scale their business quicker over time. If you are interested in this opportunity, or you know somebody that would be potentially a great fit, please email us at arome@investlegacy.com. We're happy to follow up with anybody, have a conversation with them. So if you can keep your eyes and ears open, I'd really appreciate it.